And now a story about an unqualified hit. In 1955, a sort of undefined get-you-in-the-belly music was named rock and roll. Though, as John Lennon once put it, if you tried to give rock and roll another name, you might have called it Chuck Berry. Berry was a young man in St. Louis in 1955. He recorded the song Maybelline for Chess Records, and the rest is history. At a mere 2 minutes and 18 seconds, the song embodied the sexual tensions of a generation. Or, as Berry's producer put it, the big beat, the cars, and young love. It was a trend, and we jumped on it. As part of our series on the NPR 100 Most Important American Musical Works of the 20th Century, Jesse Wegman reports on the father of rock and roll's very first hit.
It took Chuck Berry and his band 36 tries to get Maybelline just right. So you can forgive him if that trademark opening guitar lick of his sounds a bit tired.
Should be true. Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do.
In fact, it was Berry's first time in a recording studio. At 29, he'd been performing in a St. Louis trio for several years, playing mostly blues and R&B standards. But Berry had started writing his own songs, inserting elements of white country music, and he wanted to see if they would sell. On a Friday night in May 1955, Berry drove up to Chicago to catch a show by his idol, the blues great Muddy Waters.
And I listened to him for this entire set. When he was over, I went up to him, I asked him for his autograph and told him that I played guitar. How do you get in touch with the record company? He said, why don't you go see Leonard Chess over on 47th.
So early Monday morning, Berry made his way to Chess Records and positioned himself in a store across the street. When Leonard Chess arrived, Berry ran over and made his pitch. Chess was impressed by the young man's self-confidence and told him to come back with a tape of his own material. Berry returned the following week, bringing with him the other members of the trio, pianist Johnny Johnson and drummer Ebbie Hardy, and four new songs.
And we set the band up and we played all four of them. We don't know what they were saying. They're in the studio and they listened.
Berry thought they were listening to Wee Wee Hours, a blues song. After all, Chess Records was known around Chicago as a blues label. But Leonard Chess was fascinated by another, more upbeat song, Ida May, that Berry had adapted from a traditional country tune called Ida Red.
Lamp on the table, a picture on the wall, that's a pretty sofa and that's not all. I'm not mistaken, I'm sure I'm right, somebody else in the parlor tonight.
Ida Red, Ida Red, I'm comfortable about Ida Red.
Chess was sure the new song could be a hit, but he didn't like the name. It was too rural, and he thought its similarity to Ida Red might pose copyright hassles. Pianist Johnny Johnson.
And that was a problem, so nobody could think of a name. We looked up on the window sill, and there was a mascara box on there with Maybelline written on it. And then Chess said, why don't we name the damn thing Maybelline?
That was no problem for Berry, who cared more that the beat of the song not be disturbed.
Maybelline has the same rhythm as Ida Red, like da-da-da, you know, Maybelline, Ida Red, you know. So rhythm I had, but I had somebody else's title, you know. So that's how Maybelline came up.
After the recording session, Berry returned to St. Louis, where he worked for his father's construction company and was studying to become a hairdresser. He and the band were now playing three nights a week, and they'd begun to draw a more diverse audience. White people were showing up to hear this strange new mix of blues, R&B, and country and western. But after several weeks, Berry still hadn't heard from Leonard Chess. He had no idea what was happening with his songs. Then one day in August, he heard it.
Passing by a tailor shop that I got my high school graduation coat made at, and I got passed by the shop until the song played out, you know. I didn't want anybody to see me listening, you know, to it, but it was Maybelline I was listening to. And when it played out, you know, that was my last walk past the door of the place. And I flew home, you know, I was about 20 blocks from home and told everybody. And I heard it. I heard me singing, and these are relatives. These are people live on the block. So that was the first time I heard it that day. Nice sunny day, beautiful day. Knocked me out. To hear myself, you know.
As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing outrun my V8 Ford. A Cadillac doing about 90.
propelled by its persistent driving rhythm, Maybelline quickly rose to number one on the R&B charts. 2 weeks later, in August 1955, it hit number five on the all-important pop charts. At WINS in New York, disc jockey Alan Freed played the song for 2 hours straight one night. And down south, a relatively unknown singer named Elvis Presley began to include the song in his own performances.
Chuck Berry was the first artist that really did it all. He wrote the songs, he wrote the lyrics, the music, he choreographed the stage show, and no one did that.
Joe Edwards is the owner of Blueberry Hill, the St. Louis club where Chuck Berry still performs every month. He says Berry was not only a rock and roll pioneer, he was its first great poet.
Until Bob Dylan came along, there was no one that could match him, I think.
It was the way his words stayed so close to the beat, yet still managed to sound like real speech. And there were the puns. From the opening line in Maybelline, where he sang, motorvatin', as in, as I was motorvatin' over the hill, Chuck Berry's clever wordplay would change rock lyrics forever.
What he did with the English language and how he worked the words and the detail that he put into the songs, I mean, if you listen to the verses in a Chuck Berry song, they keep changing. And they keep telling the story. And then pretty soon, by the end of that song, and it might only be a 2 minute, 58 second song, but you've heard a lifetime in the life of a teenager.
Motor cooled down, the heat went down, and that's when I heard that highway sound. Cadillac setting like a ton of lead, 110 and a half a mile ahead. Cadillac looking like it's setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
Berry was also the first black rock artist to find national success performing his own music. From his experience in St. Louis, he knew what that took. And while he still listed black guitarists like Charlie Christian and T-Bone Walker as his main influences, Berry was more careful with his own image, making his diction, as he described it, harder and whiter. Johnny Johnson remembers that this could cause problems on the road.
I mean, people that never seen it, after the record come out with such a big hit, and we went on this tour, not knowing, you know, never seen a picture or nothing of Chuck, they mistook it that Chuck was white. And we would walk out on the stage, there'd be a lot of ohs and ahs and whatever, because he's a black man playing hillbilly music.
Sometimes Berry didn't make it as far as the stage. Showing up for a scheduled concert one night in Knoxville, Tennessee, he was turned away at the door. The show's organizers explained, "It's a country dance, and we had no idea that Maybelline was recorded by a Negro man." Berry returned to his car and listened as a white replacement band played his music. And there were other unpleasant surprises. When Berry finally got his hands on a copy of the record, he saw he was listed as only one of three songwriters. Alan Freed, the disc jockey who had so aggressively promoted the song, was another. The third was Russ Fredo, a man he'd never heard of. Trading credit for airplay, known as payola, was a common practice at the time, especially when the song was by a black artist. And Berry didn't ask any questions. After all, his first royalty check for Maybelline had been more than twice what he'd paid for his house. It was only later that he learned sharing songwriting credit also meant sharing the song's earnings. While there's no doubt Freed's promotion of Maybelline was crucial to its success nationwide, Berry fought for years to recover the full rights to the song.
I didn't even know that you use lawyers to correct these things, you know, then, you know. So it goes on and on and on.
But that happens to rookies, if you want to call a new musician a rookie.
In 1986, more than 30 years after he wrote Maybelline, Chuck Berry was finally credited as the song's sole composer. By that time, it was little more than a legal technicality, but in the end, it may be the most fitting tribute. After all, Maybelline could have been written by no one but Chuck Berry. If that's not already obvious from the music and the lyrics, just listen to the guitar solo. The rock and roll guitar was supposed to be a rhythm instrument, polite and unobtrusive. But a little over a minute into Maybelline, Chuck Berry, wielding his yellow Gibson ES-350T, shattered that image forever. In the years following Maybelline, Chuck Berry produced an astonishing string of hits. Roll Over Beethoven, School Days, Sweet Little 16, Johnny B. Good, to name just a few. More or less inventing rock and roll as he went along. That's pretty much the consensus. Everyone from the Beatles to the Rolling Stones has said it. But the man himself takes exception to any claims of paternity.
If you did start something, how can you say that anybody else had anything to do with it? If you started it, you know, you're the is that why they say the father of rock? Boy, they have no idea how wrong they are.
In 1972, 17 years and more than 200 recordings after Maybelline, Chuck Berry finally scored a number one hit on the pop charts. The song? A rather indelicate ditty called My Ding-a-ling. For NPR News, I'm Jesse Wegman.